be. Okay, we're going to take a little look at David's life again. So maybe you'd like to find the passage 2 Samuel 13. See if you can find 2 Samuel 13 in your Bibles. And because this is... it's one of those passages nobody ever preaches on, for obvious reasons, because it's a bit tricky. But as we're looking at this one, we're going to run you through the story. I won't be quoting too much of the actual verses because it's quite long, but I'll point out the story as we go along and you can read it for yourself. But 2 Samuel 13, you can follow in scripture if you want. There's a little tab on Facebook. Who's on Facebook? Hands up. There's a few of you. Yeah, there's a few Facebookers. Okay, there's a little tab on Facebook. I don't know what yours says. But you have some options. And it's the relationship status tab, isn't it? In a relationship, engaged, marriage, civil. It's getting very PC nowadays. Civil union, domestic partnership. I'm not quite sure what I did. Open relationship. Ooh, dodgy. It's complicated. I like that one. I think you just tick that box. I think everybody should just tick that box. Because they are, aren't they? It's complicated. Separated, divorced, widowed. So they're all there. And some of them are not as happy as others, are they? Some of them are not as happy as others. Divorced is not a happy one to put down, really. It's complicated. That's not a happy one to put down. Probably realistic, but not happy. And one of the saddest relationship stories in the Bible is actually one about David. It ends when King David gets word that his troops have been victorious, and his rival, somebody who tried to seize his throne, has been killed in battle. And now you would have thought that's good news, isn't it? So your rival, someone who's tried to take the power away from you, is now dead. Hallelujah. No. And the reason it's not a hallelujah is because it's David's own son. David's own family, close family, has died. His name was Absalom. And just as some of us may tick a box on there, like divorced, or is complicated, or and wonder how we ended up there, and we never wanted to tick perhaps those boxes, for David, the same thing happens for him. The same thing happens for him. He wonders, how did it come to this that my son is now dead because of the state of relationship that happened in his family? David and Absalom didn't end up there for no reason at all. They didn't end up in trouble. And, you know, when we value relationship, when we value our friendships, even our friendships within our families, that means we should really, really, really fight to keep them healthy. And we're going to learn from David when he didn't do that. And there were crossroad moments in David's life when he could have done that, when he could have invested in that relationship that meant so much to him with his son, and yet he didn't. He got distracted. I mean, he's a king, and he's a general, and he's a politician, and he's a warrior, and he's a poet, and he's all these statesmen, he's all these things. He's got all this stuff in his life, and he neglects his son. That friendship with his son that he really needed to sort out, and it's a difficult time. So today I want to look at some of those crossroads and talk to you about what love must do to minimize a bad relationship, a bad friendship. So we're going to talk about how to minimize the possibility of a bad friendship. And we're going to look at his life on that one. So story begins 2 Samuel 13, 2 Samuel chapter 13. One thing you may not have realized about David is that David's family was a mess. Isn't that comforting? David's family was a mess. You might think you invented dysfunctional family. You might think, you know, the Hughes have got the monopoly on dysfunctional families or whatever. But the reality is, you didn't. Many of you regularly go home to your families for Christmas or special occasions. They're usually the times, aren't they? Christmas and special occasions. And while you're there, how many of you have been struck by this simple thought? My family isn't perfect, is it? Anybody been struck by that one? Anybody sat there looking around the room thinking, they're all mad. They're absolutely barking, to use a non-PC phrase. For all of you who didn't raise your hands. For all of you who didn't say that or believe that, I just want you to know that denial is not just a river in Egypt. All right? It's not just a river in Egypt. It is something you do when you idolize families that are far from perfect. And they're not. They're not perfect. Here were David's family issues. Here we go. Serious, listen to this. Here's David's family issues, which yours probably pale into insignificance. Here we go. Are you ready? Adultery, polygamy, substance abuse, years of estrangement, vandalism, open hatred, rape, murder, and incest. There you go. Imagine getting them in a room at Christmas time. Imagine that family sitting down together around a table. That was all going on and went on in David's family. Anybody got a family that can top that list? I doubt it. I doubt it. Here's how it happened. Amnon was David's firstborn son. We're told he developed an obsession with Tamar, who was his half-sister, because David had many wives, same father, many different wives. So all of these children are related through David, but not through mother. And Amnon developed an obsession with Tamar. So he's so consumed by this, he became physically ill, and a relative noticed that he wasn't doing too well. And he asked him, what's up? What's going on? And it's amazing that I love the Bible because it's very honest and very earthy, and it tells you the story of what happens here in this dysfunctional family. Amnon told him that he basically wanted to sleep with his sister. That's what he told him. And they come up with a plan. He pretended to be ill, get Tamar to prepare food for him, and as she came to him, he would lure her to his bed. And they act on the plan, but Tamar refuses. Tamar has a lot more morals than her half-brother. And this is a shocking story. He actually rapes her. That's the story. This is David's family. This is his family. And you pick it up in 2 Samuel 13:15. Listen to this. Suddenly, Amnon's love turned to hate, and he hated her even more than he had loved her. Get out of here, he snarled at her. No, no, Tamar cried. Sending me away now is worse than what you've already done to me. But Amnon wouldn't listen to her. He shouted for his servants and demanded, throw this woman out, and locked the door behind her. So after abusing his own sister, notice how Amnon refers to her, this woman. Isn't that something people do when there's sin involved and we've got a difficult relationship with someone, and maybe we've sinned against them, maybe we're angry at them, and you know, maybe we're feeling guilty quietly, but we're angry and torn up about somebody and we start to dehumanize them, don't we? This woman. You see that a lot in the Bible. You see that when Saul was furious with Jonathan, he said, you son of a perverse and rebellious woman, he said. He didn't say, my son Jonathan, because my son involves relationship and compassion and commitment and all that stuff. So let's not do any of that. So the way we start talking means that we don't have to do that. So this son of a perverse and rebellious woman, he called him. Story of the prodigal son. You remember the older son? The older son in that one. Elder brother says to his father, this son of yours who squandered, you see again, not my brother, implying commitment and relationship and all those things that he has to be involved with that he doesn't want to be involved with. Instead, we get out of it and we depersonalize people and we don't treat them like they're connected to us anymore, and we use language to do that. So that's what Amnon is doing. We all do it when we're involved in sinning against someone. We don't want to think of them as brother or sister or neighbor or friend or colleague, but this man, this woman. That's what we do. And Amnon rejects Tamar. That's what he does. He's counting on her just being so traumatized she'll keep quiet. But Tamar is a good woman and she doesn't keep quiet. You can appreciate the sort of courage it took for this woman to say what had happened. And Tamar was betting her life on something. She was betting her life that the king, her dad, the king would do something about what had just happened. that he would have a modicum of the courage that she had had. And her brother Absalom found out what had happened. So one of the many children of David, Absalom, finds out what's happened to his half-sister Tamar, and he takes her in. And together, he has compassion on her, and he cares for her now this has come out, and they wait. They wait together for David to do something, to correct this injustice. And they wait for days, and then weeks, and then months. And eventually they wait and wait, and nothing happens. And here's what the text says in 2 Samuel 13:21. When King David heard what had happened, he was very angry. Well, whoop-dee-doo. Seriously, is that it? I'm just going to be angry about it. More needed to happen than that, didn't it? He needed to get down with his family and sort this out. But he doesn't. He just becomes angry. The text doesn't say why he doesn't do anything. Maybe he was preoccupied with being king. Maybe he was afraid of what Amnon would do. And parents, aren't we sometimes worried when we have to do something tough with our kids? And we go, no, I won't, because I don't know what they're going to do back. I don't know how they're going to react to that. So I'm not going to go there. Maybe that's what David was thinking. Maybe he just sat there and just got quietly angry and never did anything because he was afraid of Amnon's reaction. I think there might have been another reason. Look at Amnon's behavior. Amnon had used his own power and position to take what he wanted and then to cover it up. Where do you think Amnon got that idea from? From David's own life, from Bathsheba. I think David was paralyzed by his own fallenness. I think sometimes we can be. We think, well, I'm just as bad, so I'm not going to do anything wrong. And often we don't act when we should act. We don't take the tough decision, have the tough conversation, because we think, I'm not good enough anyway. I've got no moral leg to stand on, so I won't correct anything. He was still this guy's dad. He still had those responsibilities, David, and yet he just sits there and gets angry but doesn't do anything. And that's the first crossroads, I suppose. If you want to protect your friendships and your relationships, love confronts. Love confronts. It's really important to know. Let's look at ourselves for a moment. There's a problem that needs to be addressed or confronted, but addressing it will be hard. I mean, how many times has that happened to you? It comes up, doesn't it, regularly. So we remain passive and we hope the problem will go away. It's often what happens. We avoid. We just avoid rather than confront. Maybe somebody at work. Maybe someone in a small group. Maybe someone who has a character issue or an attitude problem. And you feel this wall starting to get built. Is there someone in your life where a wall is being built? Slowly and surely, and you're building up an attitude to them, and they're probably building up an attitude, and stuff isn't being dealt with and said. Now, you could talk to them, you could address the problem, it might, and it probably will get messy, but you could do that. But it's easier to ignore it, isn't it? It's easier just to ignore it. And if you ignore it long enough, you kind of get used to living with it month after month, year after year, like David did. With his family, stuff he needed to confront, and he didn't. And maybe it's a parenting problem. As parents, you know what this is like. When you're a parent, you set boundaries, don't you? We set boundaries around our kids when they're little. And how do your kids respond? How do your kids respond to you? To your boundaries. Has your kid ever said to you, Dad, Mum, I really appreciate you putting boundaries around my life. I really thank you that I have to be back in at 11 o'clock. Thank you, Dad, for keeping me away from that party that I really wanted to go to. Thanks, Dad, that you won't let me drive the car. Do kids love it? Do they thank you? No, they never ever do that. Or do they? What do? They test your boundaries. That's what they do all the time. Testing boundaries is what kids should do and what kids do for a living. That's the only way they learn where the boundaries are and they take them into the rest of their life. And if you never show them a boundary, they don't know where they are when they grow up, and they get into all sorts of trouble. So you've got to do that if you love your kids. Love confronts. Love confronts. Some of you are sitting here and maybe there's something wrong with a relationship in your world. Maybe there's something. Maybe the wall's going up. Maybe the boundaries are being breached all the time. Maybe it's a friend, a spouse, a work colleague, one of your kids. Maybe, could this be possible? Maybe somebody in this room. Look around. There's somebody in this room, maybe, where there's a relational difficulty. And I'll tell you as strongly as I know how to tell you, do not wait for it to go away. Do not wait for it to go away, because if you wait until your hand is forced, it will get worse. If you don't believe me, read the story of Amnon, Tamar, and Absalom. Read the story, because David does nothing, does not confront, it gets worse and worse, and eventually it's dealt with. But so much damage is done in the meantime. Any relationship where sin is not dealt with directly and redemptively leads to more sin. That's a rule of life. Avoid it at your peril. You can take this one to the bank. And that's what happens here. 2 years pass. Imagine 2 years since this event happens. 2 years of humiliation for Tamar, passivity for David. 2 years of brooding for Absalom, who's getting slightly more annoyed. His relationship with Dad is changing now because Dad has done nothing. So the sin is generating all sorts of attitudes and because nothing's happened. Absalom is becoming a really dangerous guy now because he wants justice for Tamar. And whatever respect he had for his father is leaking away and it's being replaced by contempt. Till the day comes when Absalom decides that if his father is too gutless to do anything about this family problem, he will do something about it. And as you read the story, you'll discover he gets Amnon drunk, they take action, he kills his half-brother. Not dealing with sin in a relationship just creates more sin. And now he knows he can't stick around, so he runs, he goes into exile, and he's in exile for 3 years. David's son is incommunicado and exiled for 3 years. And once again, during that three-year period, what does David do? Does he confront the situation? No, no contact with his son at all. If David had acted in the first place, this might have been a completely different path, but it isn't, and it gets worse. And the text says, and King David, now reconciled to Amnon's death, longed to be reunited with. He longs to be together with his son, but he does nothing. Nothing. Finally, Joab, who's chief of staff for David in his administration, a guy called Joab, intervenes. He gets David to promise that Absalom can return without penalty for the murder. So Absalom comes back to Jerusalem. And as he approaches the gates, I'm sure Absalom was wondering, how will Dad deal with this? Will he be harsh? Will he be forgiving? What will he say to me? What will my dad say to me after this disastrous situation? This is going to be a defining moment for Absalom's life. He needs a conversation with Dad. But David makes one of his biggest mistakes here. And we read this. Then Joab went to Geshur and brought Absalom back to Jerusalem. But the king gave his order. Absalom may go to his own house, but he must never come to my presence. So Absalom did not see the king. Think of the story of the prodigal son. How different that is. Isn't that different? He comes home and the father welcomes him. The father speaks to him. The father engages with him. And when Absalom most needed a dad, when Absalom most needed that conversation, someone who would listen to him, listen to his anger, listen even to his confession, listen to him confess his sin and the way he'd got so worked up, he couldn't see his own father, couldn't see the king. And that's another huge crossroads, because love confronts, but love listens as well. And that's how we guard our relationship. Love listens. Sometimes love needs to confront, sometimes it needs to listen. What Absalom most wanted was a father who would listen, even if that father said harsh things. He needed that. He needed that meeting. But there's no communication for the next 2 years. Things just spiral because David's not doing anything. He's not confronting it. He's not facing the sin and the problems that are going on in his relationships. And we read that eventually Absalom gets so annoyed, he actually, this is the vandalism bit, he sets fire to Joab's fields. Because every time he talks to Joab and says, I need to see my dad, Joab says, but he won't see you. No, but I need to see my dad, but he won't see you. And he gets so annoyed with Joab, he sets fire to his fields. Now he's in trouble. Can you imagine the level of frustration and anger at the heart of a child? The only way they can get dad's attention is by doing something a bit naughty. That's a strange concept, isn't it? Maybe not. Maybe not. Sometimes the only way people can get our attention is they act up. And what they really are desperate for is that conversation, is for someone to listen to them. And we don't do it, so they act up and it just spirals. Kids will do that. Adults will do that. When relational problems kick off, that's what happens. Sometimes it's about hoping that someone will pay attention to us. It's a huge crossroads, and things get difficult here. But love should listen. Love should listen. I wonder if the people in your life who you find difficult, have you ever sat down with them? There is an added anecdote, isn't it, that God gave us 2 ears and just 1 mouth, and actually there's a reason for that. We should spend twice as much time listening as we do talking. I wonder if you've ever sat down with the people that you are relationally struggling with and just listened. That could change everything. So Absalom acts up because nobody's listening to him. He wants attention. He wants that to happen. But the text talks about the king and Absalom. There's a public ceremony, but it's a bit of a show. It's a bit of a whitewash job. There's no real relationship. It's just a public event to say that the king and his son are really all right. Thank you very much. But they never actually meet personally and privately, so it doesn't get solved. Absalom spends the next 4 years undermining dad. He just spirals. And you know the rest of the story. He goes to all the people who are grumpy with the king, and he starts selling favors, and he starts currying support, and he does all of this stuff. And eventually it says Absalom stole the heart of the people. And after 4 years, he seizes power, and David, for the second time in his life, is running into the desert to save his own life. Because his own son, the relationship got that bad, that his own son is trying to kill him. David had to flee for his life to the wilderness. He'd been there before, and once again, as the first time, he gets broken and humbled, and one day while travelling in exile, an enemy showers down curses on him, and some of David's friends say, let's take care of this guy for you. And David says, no, maybe he's speaking the words of God to me. Maybe the insults I'm receiving are apt because I've done nothing, because I've allowed this to carry on. Maybe there's something in this. Let him speak, he says. And in the wilderness, God opens his heart again. God opens David's heart. And the warrior has one more campaign to fight. And unfortunately, this time, it's against his son. There is no option now. There is no choice. His son is trying to kill him. There has to be a battle. And his generals come back with the news. He says, be gentle with Absalom in this battle. He doesn't go because his generals say, you're not involved in this one. For obvious reasons, conflict of interests. And he stays back, but he says, please be gentle with Absalom. But Absalom dies, and they tell him. And the writer just says that the king was shaken, but there's a moment of clarity for David. And it comes often too late, doesn't it, in our relationships. Suddenly he sees this child, his son, entrusted to him. This kid who adored his dad, who knew all the stories, who really loved his dad, wanted to be like his famous dad, expected dad to behave in certain ways, in certain contexts, and didn't. And the king, David, is just shaken, and he thinks of the father that he wanted to be, but he wasn't. The things he should have said, but he didn't. The things he should have done, but he didn't. The way he should have confronted, but didn't. The way he should have listened, but didn't. And he thinks of all the stupid choices he made, that many of us do in relationships when we avoid this stuff. And finally, he pronounces one word that he could not bring himself to say all this time, that he'd avoided saying all this time. It's as if he'd been storing it up for years. And now he has to say it over and over and over again, even though his heart breaks every time he now says it. He finally says one word, "Oh, my son Absalom." You read the text, he just repeats the phrase, "Oh, my son Absalom, my son. If only I had died instead of you," he says. "Oh, Absalom, my son, my son." And I think the reason his heart was breaking was because he wondered how his whole sad story might have turned out so much differently. How his family relationships might have been so transformed if only he had done some of this stuff. Way, 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 way back. And that's the final crossroads, I suppose, is love speaks. Love speaks. Love confronts. Sometimes love needs to just listen, but love needs to speak as well. In our relationships, that's the three things we should do. Confront and listen and speak. Out of a heart of love for those that we're in relationship with, whether it be family or friends or colleagues or in church. And some of us, there's maybe a relationship that's breaking your heart, and there's a word you need to say. Maybe there's a word you need to say to that person. And if that person, like Absalom, were to not be around, if the worst case happened, as it did in David's case, his son was no longer there, you would suddenly have a moment of clarity, but often too late. So I want to ask you, what's the word you need to say to that person? If there's a relational, you know, just something that's just not working and the wall's going up and things are not being dealt with and it's been avoided and all that stuff, what's the word you need to say to that person? What does love need to say? Does it need to say, "I'm sorry"? David needed to say that. Maybe that would just sort it. "I'm sorry." Maybe it's, "I love you." Maybe, like David, it's, "I forgive you." Maybe it's, "Let's try again." What words do you need to say in that relationship? Maybe it's a son or a daughter or a mum or a dad. Maybe God is prompting you today. Maybe it will be the hardest thing you have ever done in your life. But love speaks. Love says something that needs saying. I urge you not to do what David did, which is apparently the easiest thing, but often leads to the hardest and most difficult relationships. And maybe like David, you're feeling that it's too late for whatever reason, but you need to learn, as David did, that as long as a human heart beats, there is always healing and grace and another opportunity. As long as someone is drawing breath, you or them, there is always a possibility. There is always that chance. And we know that, don't we? We know that from the cross. We know that as Jesus hung there, even in the last moment, for some people around him, in that last breath, there was chance and a new beginning and a start and forgiveness and new life. God still had a lot of things in store for David. Despite all of this, what amazes me is the love and grace of God poured out from David. He returns to Jerusalem. He takes up the reins again. He becomes king again, a little bit wiser. A little bit wiser about how to handle his own family. And God can still take us on despite whatever has happened to us. But especially for those of us who still have it within us and that power to say the word, don't wait. Don't do what David did. Don't avoid. Get stuck in. Do something. You don't know if it'll work. Paul said, as far as it is possible with you. And maybe that's all we can ever be accountable for, what we do. But let's not be like David and have regrets that we did nothing. And therefore nothing changed, it only got worse. How do you protect your relationships? How do you do that? Those are three things that we can do together. I'm going to play a little video just as we close. It's a lovely song about the humility of God. The humility of God, the heart of God. David was a man after God's own heart, and yet at times he didn't quite get that right, did he? At times he didn't display that. He learnt probably some, I suspect, the hard way. Maybe we don't need to learn the hard way. Maybe we need to look at God's heart and have a heart like that. For all those folks who we need to reconnect with, maybe. To have humility in our own lives to do that. So let's be quiet for a moment. And as this is singing, as this is playing, is there a name that comes to mind? Is there a word you need to say? Is there something you need to confront? Whatever it is, just hand it over to God while this is playing. Thank you.